Good Friday, everyone. Welcome to the VaultQuest.com podcast, a mailbag edition brought to you by Blue Water Climate Control. Be sure and check them out at BlueWaterClimateControl.com. We thank them for their continued support of the VaultQuest.com podcast. With Rob Lewis, Jesse Simonton, and Austin Price, I'm Brent Hubbs. We'll jump right into it, guys, this morning. LF Vol wants to know, seems Tennessee restocked at receiver in 2020 and can go for high-end guys in 2021. How is Tennessee positioned with a guy like Trey Curry? And how high is he on the board at this point in time?
Well, I think Trey definitely likes Tennessee, and Tennessee likes Trey. I think he's a guy Tennessee's going to continue to evaluate. I think not to say that it's like that 2 years ago where they want to see him come camp, but I think they want to. I think the hope is to get all these guys in here and watch them compete. And get a feel for what they are like. As a competitor. It helps that Tennessee's got two kids at Bradley that they're looking at, with Jalvin Burke being the other one. So, I think that he's definitely on the list. I don't want to say he's number one, but I mean, he's definitely up there.
Where do you get wide receiver as a need in this class?
I got it pretty low. I mean, I would think they'd probably take two AP.
Yeah, I agree with that.
If they hold on to Mosley, then we're talking about one spot. Right.
That's right.
So really selective at that position.
Yeah, and maybe they need to take a tight end this class. This state obviously has two good ones. One's already committed to Clemson. A lot of competition for Hudson Wolf. I think Tennessee really likes the Trinity Bell kid, at tight end. So that could be an option there.
Well, they already got one receiver committed to Jordan Mosley.
That's what I'm saying. You'll have one spot left and you take Mosley.
And so then you'd be really selective. And if that's Trey Curry, it's Trey Curry. And if not, it's not, Mosley, I think, is supposed to be in here
March 7th?
No.
March 1st?
March 1st, because they're going to play in the 7-on-7 deal up in Gatlinburg.
The 29th?
Yes, and spend the night, and they can come on campus on that Sunday.
All right, let's go.
And that's when, as a little tease, we had it in the war room, but I think that's when Tennessee's hoping that they can get the quarterback from California in here.
Casey's kid. Yeah.
Yeah. Because they're flying, they're 7-on-7 teams flying into Tennessee for that.
All right, let's go to JPL Vols. What in-state recruits Tennessee pushing for right now, and what in-state players do you think make a decision in spring? You got anybody on early watch list? Not necessarily for Tennessee, but a guy you think is going to come off the board?
Well, I'm watching Dietrich Pennington as a guy that they're going to push hard for. I don't think that ends anytime soon, though. I mean, but that's one that they covet.
Right.
In the worst way.
He's probably top. He's probably
Hudson,
top.
Hudson
top
Wolf, I think, comes off the board sometime. You have to understand. Now, spring, I go all off the map. Spring starts March 20th and runs through, June. So between March and June, I think Hudson Wolf comes off the board during spring. And so I think he's going to officially visit here for the spring game. So I think that he potentially comes off the board to somebody, whether it's here or not. I think he comes off the board in the spring. In the mid-state, I don't see Turntine doing anything. I think it'll be a little bit longer on him.
Same with Colson, probably.
Yeah. Jalvin Burke's one I'm interested to see, where's he at after he takes a couple of visits in the spring?
William Griffin.
Same thing, yeah.
Okay. Bronco Vol wants to know, why hasn't it been announced that Winkie signed a new deal? If he leaves, hypothetically, who would take his spot? I don't see Chris Winkie leaving. I don't think there's going to be – I think everybody's
– Yeah.
The NFL's basically filled out what they're doing. I guess if Colorado ever decides on a coach and there's a tie there, perhaps that's the case.
Tennessee still not announced Jimmy Brumbaugh and Shelton Felton.
Right.
So, I mean, getting someone who re-signed a contract, I mean – that's low on the totem pole.
Well, I mean, Rump and Rocker are still listed as employees on the UT website at this point in time.
Yeah, so Drew Hughes.
They haven't been in any hurry to get any of that stuff done. But I think bottom line is, I don't think you have
perhaps
to worry,
perhaps that ball will get in motion now that Tennessee has announced Zach Stipes' replacement. Yeah. Or that we know he has personally announced his own replacement.
Yeah, I think that...
Perhaps.
I think that Winkie's going to be here, though. I mean, I think that's a deal done. I think everybody wants... I think Jeremy Pruitt wants him back. I think he's going to be here spring practice working the quarterbacks. I don't see him going anywhere else. I don't see another opening coming in terms of him leaving. Again, the only job out there available right now is Colorado that could create any kind of domino effect in college football. And I don't see that being the case at all. All right, let's go to Matt for Rocky Top. Can you shed any more light on the outside linebacker position coming in the spring, or Johnson and Bennett starting with the first teamers? You got Johnson and Bennett as the starters?
I mean, we'll see. I think this is a big spring.
I think Bennett's a starter.
Johnson. Yeah.
I think Bennett's definitely a starter. DeAndre Johnson?
Where does Crouch play?
Maybe out of default because, you know, Crouch is not there in the spring and those type of things. But I think that without a doubt.
What happens with Roman Harrison in year two?
Does he stay
there?
That
development?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, Roman Harrison to me is the real X factor in this deal. Because, I mean, like, what if he takes a big jump? You know, he played more at the end of the year than he did at the beginning. So, you know, that's one I'm definitely watching to see if he can take a jump this spring and what kind of impact, you know, can a guy like Shelton Felton have on him.
All right, let's go to Galilee. Vols did great in Memphis this year. Next year's class not as good, but the 2022 class is better. Do you see any fallout with David Johnson not heading up the Vols efforts in Memphis?
No, because Memphis is down in 2021. You know, so there's only a handful of kids that, you know, Tennessee's going to have interest in. So I don't see there being a fall off. I think you're naturally going to take less kids, and they would have taken less kids had DJ been here. You know, I think DJ did a phenomenal job of keeping things warm when, you know, things got dicey, you know, early on when they didn't want several of those kids. But at the end of the day, you know, I think that they'll be just fine with T. Martin in Memphis.
Arbarger wants to know, can you rewind 2 years to the start of Pruitt's rebuild? If the ultimate goal is competing for the SEC, how has Jeremy Pruitt done so far? What areas do you think he gets positive marks for? What areas do you think he would like to do over? And then fast forward it 2 years, what do you think this Tennessee program is at? I'm going to jump in here first. I think he gets positive marks for me for growth. Okay, I think he's a guy who got better. I mean, I think he realized some things that maybe he didn't do the right way. Maybe he was too hard-headed about it. I mean, this is the same guy that told Austin, you and I sitting there when we interviewed him before the start of his first year, I mean, if I can call the offense, I'll call the offense. You know, if I can't call the defense, I'm not going to be a head coach. Yet he lets Derek Hansley in year two call the defense. I think he's grown, and that's where he gets his positive marks for me.
Well, agreed. He's identified some areas where, you know, he came up short, whether it be just little things like, you know, the office hours for the coaches and grinding them to a nub or you know, other things. I mean, let's face it. I mean, he kind of has done a do-over with some of his staff. I mean, he chose to, you know, replace Terry Fair. He chose to, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, Tyson Helton will be back whether he got a job at Western Kentucky or not. So, you know, I mean, he's had his own do-over in a lot of ways. And I think more than anything, and Jeremy will be the first to tout that I was a high school coach, you know, and I think that does behoove him to a lot of high school coaches when he's recruiting. But I think that mentality of, I mean, I'll call it the offense, you know, that's one of those things where I think he's had to grow and realize this isn't high school.
I think he's gotten a lot better, just the big picture, you know, stepping back and not feeling
dealing like with donors, dealing with media.
I mean, I was going to say PR-wise, I mean, I think he's night and day. I mean, I think he's yeah. way more comfortable in his own skin. Just, you know, I mean, he's not Mike Leach by any stretch of the imagination, but he's not afraid to show a little personality. You know, like I think he was in the beginning, and just, you know, he's not a Phil Fulmer level CEO type right now, but I mean, he's certainly moved in that direction.
Well, and he don't care to bust chops. I mean, he's made fun of my Peter Millar shirts. He's made fun of Jesse doing cycling. I mean, like, you know, he likes to, you know, he's not the stiff that sometimes everybody portrays him to be.
He was the stiff year one.
Correct. I mean, that's right. That's where he's gotten better is knowing people.
I think an area where tangibly you can see the growth too, and I think this what we've mentioned is certainly qualifies, but on the practice field, the fact that he realized, hey, how can I get the most out of these 85 guys? So he manipulated what they did for something he'd never done before because of Trey Smith,
right?
And he pulled back the horses a little bit after beating the hell out of them, you know, the year before. Yeah. Just before the Vandy game. And I think that's real growth. I mean, right. that's Tennessee doesn't rattle off six games in a row to end the season.
If he's wearing them out.
Yeah, if they don't do some of that.
And in a real tangible way, I mean, obviously, but we haven't mentioned yet, he's upgraded the roster, you know, big time, especially in the lines of scrimmage.
I think in terms of a criticism, I think AP and I agree. Year one, everyone is at a disadvantage as a first-time head coach. We've talked about it a lot with the early signing period. But he built that first staff hoping that, hey,
all those relationships,
these guys know all these other five stars at all these other places. Maybe we can just create this combustible deal where it just explodes here at Tennessee.
We were all the main recruiter for you know,
X, Y, and
Elijah
Z.
Griffin yeah. or Quay
Walker, Tyson
or,
Campbell, yeah. and all these guys. And it just –
it didn't pan out.
It didn't pan out, right. And then it left them kind of reaching for some areas yeah. that I think that if he had a mulligan on that, he'd say, we're shortchanged on part of our roster because of what we did in that first signing.
Well, and I think that he is he and some other guys, but particularly Jeremy Pruitt, because he's not gone like Willie Taggart and some other coaches who came in there that first year, the early signing period. That's he's a bit of a poster child or a little bit of a test for other new coaches coming in on how to handle the early signing period, because I think for anybody getting a job, that early signing period is a real challenge now for how you manage that. And you know, he shot for the, you know, swung for the fences and missed, and probably could have got some better players had he gone after some other players early on instead of focusing on a bunch of guys that ended up not being realistic for them. All right, All Vol SLC, how's the Cade Mays thing coming along? Any chances for eligibility next season? Is there still high hopes for that? There's been some talk out there that maybe it's not going to end well in terms of that appeal. What do you think? I don't have anything new.
I don't have anything new other than that Tom Marsh did make a statement that it was to The Athletic that wasn't as
glowing,
as firm in terms of his confidence initially. But, and that's just kind of with the understanding that it seems that the NCAA is inundated with these cases, and it's kind of how fast do they get to them and how good is your lawyer. We know Tom is a good lawyer.
I still wonder, though, if the new transfer rule is coming into play, do you go ahead and just wipe some of these across the board?
Yeah, because if you don't, and then it comes into the, you know, it's like the whole, you know, play four games and you can still redshirt. Think about, you know, you go back 2 years ago, who did that hurt? You know, who lost a year of eligibility that they won't get back? I'm surprised you've not seen somebody try to cash in on that. You know, I mean, that's not fair when you're later, you know.
Yeah, I just don't, I mean, I wonder how quick that transfer rule will go into place and how that would affect the NCAA's thinking behind the scenes on that deal when they look at current transfer cases in terms of immediate eligibility. I don't think you're going to hear a ruling on that anytime soon. I think that's going to be a up in the summer unknown type deal that everybody's going to wonder about with Cade Mays. All right, Rocky Top 73, Rob, he wants to know how much of the men's basketball team's inconsistency and poor offensive production is due to the players' unfamiliarity with each other. Would the Vols have been more consistent and productive this year had Lamonte not had his injury that ended his career at Tennessee? I think obvious on the Lamonte thing.
Yeah, I mean, don't think there's any question. I mean, your point guard got here on December 28th. He was playing 35-plus minutes a game for you. You got
biting his arm.
I mean, part of it is like, I mean, you've talked about this in terms of the Bowden deal and why Bowden misses Turner so much, because they had a chemistry to know where he was going to be on the floor. When Lamonte went left, you know, on a dribble drive, if Bowden was on that side of the floor, Lamonte knew where Bowden wanted the ball for that three-point shot. Whereas, you know, Vescovi or even Josiah James, who didn't go through October, doesn't have that feel for where guys are going to be and where they want the ball. Even ball placement on a curl for Jordan Bowden is different with Vescovi versus Lamonte Turner, don't you think?
No question. I mean, I don't think you can overstate it. I mean, you look at this. The contrast between last year's team, when I'm talking about, and when I say chemistry, I mean on-court chemistry, because I mean they still have a good locker room. I mean, it's
right.
that part of it is real strong. But when you're talking about a guys who, by the midway point of last year, had played over 100 basketball games together, you know, you're starting five for the most part, and you just can't replicate that with, you know, this many new pieces at all. So I mean, I think that's a huge deal. Yeah, I mean, I think Lamonte. And not just Lamonte not being here, but not being healthy at any point in the year. I mean, Rick has not used that as an excuse. I mean, he's quick to say that everybody, you know, goes through things like that. But, I mean, there's no way to quantify this. But just as an example, I think they would – if Lamonte is on the court and is Lamonte from a couple, you know, the last couple of years, I think they win Texas A&M, they win South Carolina. So, I mean, if that happens, they're sitting here at, what, 8-5 in the SEC?
You got a chance to finish as high as second or third in the league.
I mean, it's a totally – I mean, it's just those two giveaway games. I mean, it's – and who – I'm not saying he may have made an impact somewhere else, but those are two that I can point to where I think Yeah, he's worth 2 points in that game.
Yeah, and it changes the dynamics of where this team is in terms of tournament play and opportunities there, because you're approaching the 20-win mark and you've got a chance to finish as high as second or somewhere between second and fourth in SEC play. All right, let's go to Vol Lover. The last time there was this much optimism, that's his name, Vol Lover. Last time there was this much optimism surrounding the football program was heading into the 2016 season. Then you had the 5-0 start. You had many proclaiming that Tennessee football was back. All that proved to be fool's gold as things headed downhill fast. Fast forward to 2020, there's that same type of excitement under Jeremy Pruitt. How optimistic should Vol fans be about the future under Pruitt, and what makes this different than any time before or during the past decade wander through the wilderness?
Well, 2016 was such a missed opportunity because they legitimately were a top 10 team that had a chance, I think, to not only win the East but compete for the SEC. I mean, as the four of us sit here today, we do not view Tennessee in 2020 in that light. Tennessee is on an upward trajectory, but I would very much be surprised if Tennessee even won 10 games next season.
Yeah, for me, I mean, I just want to pump the brakes on that, because, I mean, at the end of the day, it's, you're talking about when you're 5-0, you'd, you know, beat App State at home, you beat, won the Battle of Bristol, you beat Florida and Georgia. I mean, Tennessee won games this past year that they've not been able to win. Missouri, Vanderbilt, South Carolina, in that six-game run, and that's good. That's a huge step in the right direction. But you've still got to get to take the, you know, the step that 2016 team made. You've got to be able to win those games against, you know, the big three. You know, not all of them, but you at least won one. And so, Jesse and I are on the different ends of the spectrum on this. I think moving Georgia later in the year is a good thing for Tennessee. He's right from the standpoint of it gives them a chance. It gives Georgia, with all the inexperience on offense, a chance to grow. But to me, it's better for Tennessee because they don't have Florida, Georgia, West team, Alabama, like this murderer's row in a row. Like, you have it spaced out a little bit more. So, you know, can Tennessee win one of those three games this year? Yeah, they can beat Florida at home. And who knows, Georgia late in the year, you don't know what they'll be. You just don't. So, I mean, you never know. But I do think that, you know, he's right. 10 games, you know, in the regular season would be, you know, to me, that would be a tough undertaking.
And I'd go back to 2016. Tennessee's program to start that year was on firmer footing and a better place than Florida or Georgia. You know,
yeah,
that's not the case.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that. I mean, I think Jesse said it best. I mean, of all the 10 years in the wilderness, and even the last 15 years or so, that 2016 year may not have been a greater missed opportunity for Tennessee than what it was that year.
And even 15, when they blew all those leads. I mean, like, that was back-to-back years where they could have.
Oh yeah. I mean,
16 was a veteran
correct.
Team.
Yeah.
Who
had talent at a lot of positions. I mean,
you
had Alvin, and, you know, obviously you had a difference maker at quarterback and Dobbs. You had Barnett on the other side. You had a lot of weapons. There's a lot of NFL players that were on that 16 team that just blew the opportunity to win a championship or win a division. Because when you beat Florida and Georgia, you ought to be in Atlanta. If you win those two games and you don't get to Atlanta, it's a total collapse. That was certainly the case for that team.
It's one of the most impressive tricks Butch Jones ever.
It's total collapse. It's
like, you can't beat Florida and Georgia and not make Atlanta. Hold my beer.
All right, real
watch
Joe.
Watch this, Houdini.
Yeah, the real Joe French wants to know, Rob, any chance Pons jumps this year like Bone did a year ago?
I mean, I wouldn't completely rule it out by any stretch of the imagination, but I mean, right now, I don't think so. But I mean, I know that he's aware of his status as a guy that the NBA is, you know, that they see him as a multi-positional defender and somebody that will have a chance to make a roster. But again, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion by any stretch of the imagination. I would tend towards saying it's not likely, but to answer his question, yeah, I mean, there's a chance.
Yeah, I like Joe's questions here, so we're going to continue with part two in his three-part post. With a healthy Josiah James, Pons back, and the way Folky is developing, add in the freshman class, how would you compare expectations for that team compared to last year or some of the late Pearl squads in terms of next year's team expectations?
I think it's fair to expect them to be a fringe top 10 team. I like the fact that, I mean, I'm a big fan of the freshmen. I've seen Keon a lot. I've seen Jaden several times. And I think they're –
Did everybody just forget about Corey Walker, by the way?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit. But he's going to be a good player. But he's probably going to – assuming Pons is back, I mean, he'll back Pons up, but he'll play a lot. But, I would – set the ceiling, but I think it's fair to expect a Sweet 16 team. And I really like the fact that they're going to, you know, they're going to have a nice mix of youth and veterans. I think that's
a big deal. It's not going to be a Fab Five deal. Yeah. It's not going to be five.
I think that's a huge deal. Yeah. I mean, I think being old in college basketball is a really good thing. I mean, just look around the country right now. I mean, you're not getting it done at a super high level, you know, if that's how you're – and you haven't been, except for Duke did it 1 year, Kentucky did it 1 year. And outside of that, I mean, you need to have a mix.
Yeah, no question. All right, his last question is to you, Austin. Anything new on Evans? Zach Evans realizes that no one really knows, but curious if the staff feels the same about their shot with him today as they did a month ago.
Yeah, I don't think anything's really changed. I mean, like, you know, continue to have dialogue. But, I mean, at this point, I would take the field versus Tennessee for Zach Evans. I mean, like, I'm not saying they're
safest
not going
to bet.
Yeah, it's the safest bet. I'm not going to say they won't get him, but, you know,
but,
I mean, when you
but
look
they're
at,
not, but not in the catbird seat.
No, yeah. And nothing's trending or anything either. So, I mean, like, it's one of those things where they're still in it, still talking, but, you know, that one seems, again, like it's going to have 15 or 16 more turns before it's all said and done.
All right, Delmar 6477, Robles here, true feelings. If the Vols miss the NCAA tournament, does Barnes or the roster bear more of the burden? Is it concerning that the best guard on the team is the guy who's is it concerning that the best guard on the team is a guy that has really been developed by Barnes? He just kind of showed up and started playing. I guess he's saying he wasn't developed by Barnes. Vuskovic's the best guard. He just showed up here. I love Rick Barnes. I think he's an outstanding man and coaching at UT, and UT's lucky to have him. I just thought after the last two seasons that the Vols would never miss the NCAA tournament again under his tenure.
I mean, I think it's the roster's fault. I mean, it's abundantly odd, and you can blame Rick for constructing this roster, sure. I mean, he's the head coach, but I mean, my God, look at it. Last year, you lost four multi-year starters to the NBA or, you know, two-way contracts, and what'd you replace them with?
That's a good basketball
Not the same level of ability. I mean, he's the best guard of the team. Was it developed? What about – you think John Fulkerson's been developed, Eddie? Do you ever think he was going to score 25 points in an SEC game?
Or Eve Pons being actually realistic.
Eve Pons being on NBA draft boards when he couldn't, you know, dribble and chew gum at the same time as a freshman.
Last year, just disappeared.
I mean, come on. The guy didn't forget how to coach.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, too. I mean, Vuskovic, look, I think it's a great story what he's done. He's still averaging about 6 turnovers a game. At the point guard spot.
And there's a defensive liability.
You know, I mean, he would play. He would be a factor on this team if Lamonte Turner had
not
gotten hurt.
He would not be starting over.
But he would not have been given the ball.
No, their bench would be way better. Their bench, which is non-existent, would be way better if he was rolling off of it.
Oh, no question. No question. I mean, what would have been nice if Turner could have stayed healthy is you could have moved Turner off the ball some and let him play the two and play Vuskovic at the one and give yourself some more options. And then at times you could have brought Turner back to the point position, let him play point. You'd have just had flexibility
Lamonte,
there.
More importantly, Lamonte would be guarding the ball on defense
right
all the time as opposed to throwing Santiago out there and saying, hang on.
Yeah. All right, let me tell you a little bit about Blue Water Climate Control, where you get your comfort today. When your system breaks, you want a company that will get you there fast and do the right repair the right way the first time. Blue Water responds to more than 90% of their calls the same day that they're received. Blue Water offers 24-hour service, and all the technicians are trained and certified. Call them today at 865-299-2290. Mention VolQuest, and you'll get your diagnostic for free with repairs. 865-299-2290 is the number. Give them a call at Blue Water Climate Control. You can check them out online, bluewaterclimatecontrol.com, or you can visit them on Twitter at BlueH2O_climate, BlueH2O_climate. Burrow Boys 615 wants to know, why do you think that there is blue chip quarterbacks rarely coming out of the state of Tennessee? Is it the offensive style in high school or what? What has prevented the state of Tennessee from producing a lot of blue chip quarterbacks? Although I think there's a couple coming down the pike in the next few years.
Well, there are. You know, the young freshman at Brentwood Academy, obviously Ty Simpson in the 2022 class, the freshman at Brentwood Academy Montgomery Bell Academy, is a 2023. I think he's going to be a Power 5 SEC type guy. So, I mean, but he's right. If you go back, I mean, anybody that's actually found any traction out there, the Chad Penningtons and, you know, those type of guys, you know, they weren't highly coveted players.
It's remarkable. I mean, the whole time we've been doing this.
I think part of it is, for the longest time, the wing tee was so prevalent in the state.
Engel Martin, B.J. Coleman, those are the two highest rated guys.
But I mean, this is a state that was late to the spread, late to a lot of throwing offenses. I mean, Chad Pennington played in the wing tee. You know, he didn't throw the ball, you know, half a dozen times a game. He might go, it might take him three games to throw it six times. And so I think offensive style probably did limit some of that stuff. I think the other thing, too, is over the last decade, look at how the high school football in the state has improved. There's a lot more specialized training now. You know, you got a guy who's playing a quarterback is not necessarily the point guard on the basketball team and the starting pitcher, you know, on the baseball team, playing summer league, travel baseball. I mean, it's a guy who's specializing in quarterback development. Yeah. And I think as a result, you're going to continue to see some guys come across the state.
Yeah, the one guy we didn't mention right then was Caden Martin, who, again, has never really put a ton of time into the football. He's just naturally gifted, you know. I mean, when spring gets here, he's on the baseball diamond. So he misses out on spring practice, you know. Then, you know, summertime gets here, he's still on the baseball diamond. And then basically he rolls right off the diamond onto the practice field in August. That's hard to improve at football if you're not putting a ton of time into it. But he's just naturally gifted and can make a lot of throws. And, you know, if he grows, he's going to blow up. Like, I mean, he's already got offers, okay, don't get me wrong. But I'm talking like if he grows and can get to his dad's height of 6'3", then he's a guy that I think really takes off one way or the other, whether it's, you know, top-end baseball player with a high draft pick or you know, Power 5 legit quarterback.
What do you think he's going to do, AP? I mean, I know there's no answer right now, but if you just had to guess, I mean, you think it depends on his growth? Or?
I think he loves baseball, but I think he kind of wants to be a football player. I think everybody tells him futures in baseball, but I think he's kind of driven by the doubting for football. I think he likes football.
And the Kyler Murrays of the world doesn't hurt the idea of playing football because, you know, if you can make it to that next level, then the money up front in football is a lot better than the money up front.
And you're not
in
riding
baseball.
Minor league buses for three or four years.
Which is a lot of those guys are looking at.
And, I mean, I don't know, he's probably too young to be thinking about this. I mean, quarterbacks have never been protected like they are right now because of the rules of the game. I mean, I'm not saying there's not an injury risk, but I don't think it's what it was 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, I agree. C. Taust 1 wants to know, any idea who will get the special teams coordinator title? We think it's going to be Jay Graham?
I don't know if anybody will get it.
They may spread around the responsibilities.
Just may not hand that title out.
Yeah.
May save that one
until you have to give somebody a raise.
Yeah, may do it. May use it as a little bit leverage. All right, Deshaun 13. Which new position coach, Jesse, makes the biggest impact? That could be on the field or in recruiting. Which new position coach you see making the biggest impact between Brumball, Graham, and Shelton Felton?
We're not including Ostevet in this?
Yeah, I got to throw Ostevet. He's new in there for four.
I'm going to say Ostevet just because I think he has the most relationships currently with 2021s. I mean, we're talking about Damian Robinson, Christian Ballou, some of the other kids up that way. I mean, those are guys that Tennessee covets, that he's gotten to campus. That's not to say Shelton Felton can't have an impact in Georgia or Brumball, wherever he, you know, lands in terms of his area of responsibilities, but that's the safest bet to me.
Okay. James Mills wants to know, first time, long-time listener, first time caller, first time poster here. It's been widely discussed that we could have a quarterback or two to leave after spring ball and maybe a running back as well. Do we think there would be any other positions we see this at too? Maybe a senior defensive lineman that doesn't get that much play, wants to start somewhere else, or a linebacker that can't crack the two deep? I think in this day and age.
I think Tim Jordan's a candidate because, I mean, like, the more Eric Gray ascends to, you know, his role, Ty Chandler's already ahead of Tim Jordan. Does Tim look around? Because, I mean, like, you know, you're talking about, you know, your time is dwindling down. You only got a year left. You know, does he make the move after spring? I think that's one I'm watching.
Yeah. All right, a couple more here. We'll wrap this thing up. T. France wants to know, with the new transfer rule that might go into place, won't the transfer market be followed almost as close as recruiting? Is there a fear of a purge after a coaching change where something like 30 or 40 guys could possibly leave? Also, what if a player signs in the early period and changes his mind and can't get out of his LOI? Can he go ahead and use his one-time transfer before he steps on campus anywhere?
I mean, we talked a lot about this on Monday. I do think the fears of that 30-40 purge is the exact reason why I think coaches are going to advocate hard for the 85 and get rid of the 25, so that if that does happen, that you then are allowed to sign as many kids as you want.
If you can sign 35, you sign 35.
I also think there's, you know, a lot of folks are worried about the tampering and stuff. The tampering happens anyways. If the NCAA wants the tampering to stop, the NCAA can actually put its foot down. Right now, the NCAA just doesn't seem to really be too concerned about, you know, all the conversations that are happening behind the scenes, whether it's football or basketball.
Yeah, they're not going to put their foot down on that if they got Will Wade on tape offering kids.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But a lot of folks seem to be raising that objection. So
I think the one thing about this, I mean, I think this is driven largely by the fact that the NCAA can't manage the amount of people at requesting waivers. They've allowed the waiver thing to become out of control. They're afraid of getting sued. I think in typical NCAA fashion, they don't look at all sides of things. I wonder what it's going to do to a guy who's at Central Florida, Memphis, or even at a lower level. I mean, because if you're sitting there and you think this, you know, if you're a junior, you know, like, for example, Chattanooga's got three guys on the Titans roster. Do you think any of those three guys would have finished their career at Chattanooga if they had a one-time transfer waiver to transfer up?
Nope.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
I mean, so it's gonna kill those. So here's a guy at Memphis putting up big numbers, but everybody says, hey, you need to play better competition. He knows he's not going to play in the college playoff. He's not going to play for a championship. Does he say, hey, I'm going to go improve my NFL stock for a year by going into the SEC, because the SEC didn't want me when I was a freshman, and that was Memphis was the best opportunity
I had. Another wrinkle to that, I mean, just sticking with Memphis, say there's, you know, three guys there and your junior quarterback just had a great year. Mike Norvell gets the Florida State job. How many of those kids in this scenario go with him?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think, again, they're
I wonder if they'll set it up where you cannot – kind of like you can't follow, like, you know, Crouch cannot follow his high school coach to his next destination. I wonder if they set it up for that scenario where you can't follow your coach if he leaves.
Would that apply to assistants, I wonder? I mean, how far
might you stretch it? Again, I think there's – on the surface, it's easy to say, yeah, it's the right thing to do, and I'm not saying that they don't need to have the flexibility to transfer. I think there's a lot of sense in that. There's some side effects to it that nobody
one proposal that's out there too is that, talking about coaching changes, is that you have a one-time transfer if your coach leaves. That's it. Not that it's free agency, but that if your coach leaves, that's your one ticket.
But does that apply to head coaches or position coaches?
Well, there's two different forms out there.
And think about that, because you know this would happen. Say Jeremy's talking to Jay Graham, and he's like, hey, I got a $250,000 raise and a three-year guaranteed contract for you if you can bring player A and B with you. Also, I mean, that will happen.
Oh, absolutely. That conversation is going to happen. You know, hey, you can become my quarterback's coach, but you got to bring your starting quarterback with you if you're going to do that. You know,
well, Will Muschamp got that with Bobo.
Yeah, right.
I mean, he did. I mean, the kid transferred. No, it was a grad transfer. He earned his time. Kudos. You know, I don't besmirch the kid at all. But, you know, South Carolina gets Bobo, and a guy who's put up a whole lot of yards but was hurt last year, you know, leaves Colorado State, and I think has a really good shot at unseating Helinski this year.
Wow. Go Vols 2019. Austin wants to know, where does Tennessee stand with Trevion Henderson?
I won't say chasing. I just think they're in a big pack of schools, you know, trying to jockey for position. I mean, you know, he by no means is leaning here. I don't know if he's really leaning anywhere. I think he's got a lot of teams he likes, Oklahoma, Georgia, Tennessee, Penn State, Ohio State. There are several schools that, you know, I think he's got a lot of interest in.
Yeah, I don't think – all right, last one, AP, for you here. Iron Vol wants to know, where do you think Chase Hayden's going to transfer to, and what kind of impact would his transfer have on Dallin's recruitment?
Well, I think that obviously it would make things, you know, I won't say shutting, you know, I don't think he shuts it down. Dallin's the one that's going to, you know, be his own person, but I think obviously it gives Tennessee, you know, the edge if Chase ends up here. I'm interested to see where does Bielema get the Colorado job. You know, if he does, he's the one that recruited Chase to Arkansas. Bielema has stayed in contact with that family since he left and went to, you know, the Patriots and so on and so forth. So,
That one would be worth watching if Bielema gets that job in Boulder.
Bielema right. is chasing them jobs this offseason.
He is,
man.
He certainly is.
And so his Arkansas check stopped coming.
Yeah, once they decided they're not going to pay him. All right, Rob, Charlie Work wants to know, assuming Pons and Josiah James stay for next year, which I don't know where Josiah James will be going, what's your starting lineup, and do you think Tennessee gets another big man in the class of 2020?
Somebody's going to have to leave if that were to happen. So I don't know. I mean, I know Tennessee's open to the possibility of taking a grad transfer. I think that's what they'd really like to do. If they could find somebody, you know, quality guy to help them. Dylan Cardwell's still out there. Tennessee's still in contact with him. But right now, you know, somebody would have to transfer. Is that possible? Yeah. That's possible. Starting lineup? Man, I don't know. Too early for me to say. I mean, I pencil Folky and Pons in. And after that, I don't know. I mean, there's going to be some intense competition. I have a very hard time thinking that Springer and Keon won't start if both of those guys arrive here healthy. But if that's the case, neither, you know, Josiah or Viscovi is sitting. Not sitting. I mean, all those guys are going to play a lot. So, I mean, I don't think that starting is really going to matter. But I think you're going to see a lot of guys, those four guys, Jaden, Keon, Josiah, Viscovi play, you know, 20, 25 minutes a game each, somewhere between there.
All right, I'm going to piggyback off that with this question from I'm So Vol. Of those three freshman basketball players next year, which one will be the best player when the season comes to an end?
When it comes to an end?
At the end of the year, yeah.
I think it depends on – I mean, I think Keon is going to – you know, it's tough for any freshman immediately offensively. I think Keon is going to make an instant impact just because he is going to be so good defensively. Just out of the gate. I mean, he's going to be able to lock people down. That's not to say that Jaden is not a good defender, but I mean, Keon is special in that way with his length and his athleticism and his attitude towards playing defense. Springer, I would guess, is probably going to have better numbers just because he is a scoring machine. He's a pure scorer and can help you on the ball and off the ball offensively. But I think it's 6-1, half dozen the other. I mean, what are they rated right now? 15 and 16 in the 2020 class. So, I mean, flip a coin. They're both going to be really good.
Jesse Ball in L.A., who's replacing director of player personnel, Drew Hughes. We think that's probably going to be Danny Stim.
Yeah, right now it seems like Danny's going to earn that promotion. He's a guy Pruitt has a long history with. He's a Hoover High guy. Pruitt trusts him. We've discussed it before. This is a tape grinding job, the way Tennessee kind of views that position. Danny is as diligent as anyone as they have in that room. The likelihood is they're simply looking for folks to hire as his replacement.
And somebody asked this in the thread too. I don't have their screen names from it. What is the director of player personnel? I think it's different at every school.
It is different at every school.
I don't think there's a blanket like cookie cutter to
here,
that.
Here they're not the GM type of deal, but they have a say in personnel. They, you know, help the staff kind of build that recruiting board. But then they're out there constantly evaluating. They're looking at both prospects that, you know, Tennessee is heavily involved with. They're looking at prospects that Tennessee should get involved with. You go into Drew Hughes' old office and he's got a giant, you know, war board and, you know, stickers and numbers and tape and colors and stuff everywhere. And it's also managing both the recruiting board, but what does your current roster look like and how do you anticipate
needs,
potential attrition? We talked about the guy like Tim Jordan could, you know, perhaps explore out, well, what's the domino effect of that? You know, it's the player personnel director to kind of be ready for the next move.
It's interesting because in Tennessee's case, it feels like it's an evaluation job, tape evaluation, but it's an administrative job just in kind of an organization and helping the coach understand roster management. You know what I'm saying?
And they are in charge of recruiting.
They
also are in charge of the, you know, technically in charge of the on-campus recruiting staff. You know, they don't manage all the day-to-day duties of what goes on there, but they technically oversee that position.
All right, last question of the Mailbag podcast here is from Nashville 615. Probably too early to tell, but who fills the leadership void left by Juwan, Nigel, Daryl Taylor, and Batuli? I know you can't replace a guy like Juwan Jennings, but who is the guy that gets everybody in line. He's vocal and takes the reins of this team.
Trey Smith.
Yeah, it's Trey Smith. But other than, I do think that we know Trey is the most obvious one, but there's no doubt there's some loud voices left that room with Nigel and Jawan
longer here. The defensive side is the one I wonder.
And I think Jeremy's going to be peppered with this question, both at the beginning of the spring and then how has it kind of manifested itself by the end of spring.
Well, I wonder if, you know, can an Alante, Bryce Thompson take a leadership role? How vocal can Henry Tee get?
I
think that's the guy everybody's going to look to, but how vocal, how much of that is in his DNA and in his nature?
I think he's got those kind of qualities for sure on deep. But also, I mean, he's 19 years old. I think the way he plays, the way he works, I think that makes it, you know, feasible, but it's still a big ask for a sophomore.
And I think that's the guy Jeremy Pruitt's going to push to take that role. He's going to be on that guy and spend a lot of time with him about being a quality leader for this defense, because they're going to need that guy for sure. All right, that's going to do it for this mailbag edition of the Blue Water Climate Control Podcast. For Austin Price, Rob Lewis, and Jesse Simonton, I'm Brent Hubbs. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend, everybody.